Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This hour on The Brian Lehrer Show, is the IRS story really a scandal? Did they even target only conservative groups at all? We will look for some truth and clarity amid the media hyperbole and haze. Also, Khaled Hosseini, best known for his novel The Kite Runner. We'll talk about that in his new book. And we'll continue our series with Bill McDonald, Obits editor for The New York Times, on the significant lives they're writing about today, including Ray Manzarek, keyboardist for The Doors, who just passed away. All that coming up in 1 minute. After a brief reminder, if you're just joining us for this morning, that this is the second to last day of the spring membership drive. If you haven't made your contribution yet for 2013, we hope you'll do it right now at 1-888-376-WNYC. Come on, procrastinators. Our pledge drive ends tomorrow, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. The last contest of the drive is closing at noon. If you pledged earlier or you're a sustaining member, you're in. And it's our WNYC Superfan giveaway. It's a station tour, lunch with a WNYC host of your choice, and an iPad mini. 1-888-376-WNYC or WNYC.org. Please help us pay the bills before time runs out on the contest at noon and on the drive tomorrow. And thank you all so much for considering it. We'll spend a few minutes now trying to clear up one basic question about the IRS story, which is continuing to evolve this morning, as you just heard on the news. Did they or did they not target conservative groups? That they did seems to be accepted fact by many. But is it true that they were singled out? Is this whole story even worthy of the word scandal, which many are using for it? For example, a front page headline in USA Today last Wednesday said the IRS gave a pass to liberals. That was the headline. That Tea Party groups mired in red tape as liberal groups easily got tax-exempt status. But a story in Sunday's New York Times said while that Cincinnati office flagged applications from groups with Tea Party in their names, it also gave extra scrutiny to dozens of liberal groups. So is this whole kerfuffle a scandal at all, or overwrought reporting about an overwhelmed back office in Cincinnati somewhere? Let's try to sort it out with two journalists honestly trying to get to the bottom of things. Nicholas Confessori, who wrote Sunday's story in the New York Times and generally covers the intersection of money and politics, and Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Hi, Susan. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Susan, the USA Today story last week that I referred to, it said as applications from conservative groups sat in limbo, groups with obviously liberal names, like with the words progress or progressive in their names, saw their applications approved in as little as 9 months, according to a review of IRS data by your paper. Can you talk more about that review and what you concluded?
Yes, this was a story that was done by Gregory Cordy, who is one of the reporters in our Washington Bureau and who would be on the show today, except he's at that hearing on Capitol Hill now where Douglas Shulman, the former commissioner of the IRS, is testifying. Mm-hmm. He took a look at this and he found that in that 27-month period from the time that the IRS office in Cincinnati began scrutiny of groups that seemed political who were seeking this tax-exempt status, that during that 27-month time, not a single application from a group with the name Tea Party in its name was approved, while dozens of groups that had progressive-sounding names were approved for tax-exempt status. Now, that doesn't mean that no liberal group got special scrutiny. Some of the liberal groups have complained that their applications were also held up and scrutinized. But clearly, groups with liberal-sounding names, it seems to us, groups with liberal-sounding names clearly got different treatment, better treatment, than groups with Tea Party in their name.
But, Nick, your New York Times story on Sunday says while that Cincinnati office flagged tax-exempt status applications from groups with Tea Party in their names, it also gave extra scrutiny to at least two dozen from liberal groups, including with names like Progress Now and Progress Texas. Can you talk more about that and how you came up with that number?
Well, here's what we know and don't know. We know that almost every group that had Tea Party in its name was flagged, and that A large number of those groups had very long delays, and some subset of them were subject to intrusive questionnaires that the IRS now acknowledges were not appropriate. We also know that at least two dozen groups on the left got subject to similar scrutiny, as well as a bunch of groups that are kind of hard to categorize in any way, really. And some of those groups got the same questionnaire or very similar questionnaires of 30 or 40 questions that were equally intrusive. And then overall, we know that about 470 groups, including the 100 or so Tea Party groups we've heard about, excuse me, were involved in the scope of this review. What we don't know are the following things. We don't know why a manager in Cincinnati asked a specialist to run a search on Tea Party groups in 2010. That's an important detail. We don't know really how many progressive groups are caught up in the pipeline and haven't been approved yet, because, of course, the IRS cannot tell us about a group they haven't approved. And we don't know which groups got which questionnaires. So I'm not ready to write this off as a non-scandal by any means. I think there are some big unanswered questions, and obviously some huge mistakes were made and some violations of IRS policy were made. But there are a lot of questions we don't have the answers to yet.
I want to play just a 12-second clip from last Friday's hearing with the acting IRS commissioner who lost his job over this, Steve Miller, seeming to make the distinction that conservative groups were targeted, but it was not a political act. Listen.
Foolish mistakes were made by people trying to be more efficient in their workload selection. The listing described in the report, while intolerable, was a mistake and not an act of partisanship.
Not an act of partisanship. So, Susan Page, do you conclude from your reporting that this office was out to stop conservatives from influencing elections, which would be a political agenda, or just out to triage their workload in an innocent but bungling way, or something in between?
Well, I think we don't know yet. I mean, I don't think we know the motives of those who are behind this really ham-handed, misguided effort to decide which groups to scrutinize and which not to scrutinize. But I will note that the Inspector General report, which is a nonpartisan investigative arm of the Treasury Department, concluded that conservative groups were singled out. And, you know, I don't actually see a conflict between Nick's excellent and complicated story from Sunday's Times and the story that Gregory Cordy did in Wednesday's USA Today, because we were looking at different things. Nick's investigation was looking at groups that had applied for nonprofit status. We looked at groups that got approved during this 27-month period for nonprofit status and found a disparity there. So while the pitch on the story is different, I suppose, I don't really think the findings of these two stories are in conflict.
And, Nick, on this question of whether there was a political agenda at all, the Inspector General's audit, according to an explainer in the Times today, found that higher-ups at the IRS tried to stop the targeting when they learned about it. Now, that would seem to clear the White House or Obama campaign of having been in on this to weaken Tea Party spending during the election campaign, and yet it also uses the word targeting. So what do you make of that conclusion by the Inspector General?
Well, you know, there were a few things in that report, Brian. You know, he says that in this finding, he says that other keyword searches were used to flag groups and sort through the influx of applications, and that he only examined the Tea Party flag, which what he was asked to do by Congress. He did not specify what the other searches and flags were, and he did not investigate them or review them. So, you know, it's hard for me to imagine that there is something equally controversial here for other groups, but I still kind of want to know more about how they go through this process. And one thing that kind of stands out when I was looking at the list of groups that the IRS now says have already been approved, which means they can actually provide us with the names, is that a lot of Tea Party groups chose very similar names. The other groups, you know, Progress, you know, is a word that appears in some group names, but Tea Party appears in a lot of group names. And I think it's interesting to consider in 2010, you have a new political movement, a genuine political movement. It's organizing itself. It's a citizens movement in a lot of ways. It's got a lot of grassroots activity. And these groups that are springing up around the country and affiliating themselves with something larger that they call a party, and you're a specialist in Cincinnati, and you're seeing all these groups you haven't seen before, and they're calling themselves a party. And some of these groups, by the way, are applying for 501c3 status, which means they are strictly limited from doing any political activity in the sense of election activity. That's a very long answer, but I'm trying to explain that I just feel like there's a lot of stuff we don't know. I'm not sure I agree yet that they were targeted in the sense of somebody flagged those groups with the intent to specifically impede a political movement to hurt conservatives specifically, although there is no question it had that effect, which is important.
Right. And I think you make a very important distinction. And if people can hold just a slightly complicated thought in their heads, then, you know, what you're saying is probably very, very important to understanding the heart of this situation. And Susan, the witness, I guess right now, even as we speak, and we heard a clip of him on the news at the top of the hour, is the former IRS director before Steve Miller. And every time I hear Steve Miller's name invoked in this, I'm thinking he should break out into a version of Take the Money and Run by the old Steve Miller band, and that would be very appropriate. But his predecessor, Doug Shulman, who was head of the IRS, presided for most of this time period, and guess what? He was appointed by President Bush.
Yes, it's a wonderful world in Washington, and of course, when we look at you're asking the fundamental question: is this a scandal? And it seems to me there are two kind of separate phases by which to make that judgment. One, it was the targeting of certain groups, the extra scrutiny, and the inappropriate questions asked of them. Is that a scandal? And if so, who's responsible? The second is, was there a cover-up? I mean, as we, you know, it's a classic line in Washington, it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. In this case, did officials act appropriately when they discovered that this inappropriate, apparently inappropriate activity was going on? And were they, you know, forthcoming with Americans about what was happening? So Douglas Shulman is clearly a key person in that first phase. Stephen Miller is a pretty key person, it seems to me, in that second phase.
So do you each use, as we ran out of time here, the word scandal in your stories to refer to this whole situation? Do you in USA Today, do you have a policy on this?
Well, I don't know if we have a policy. I was writing about it in today's paper, and I used the word controversy to refer to all three of the furores that the Obama administration is now facing in connection with a poll that we did about their impact.
Nick, in the Times?
Similarly, I'm not sure if we have a scandal. It's a word in general I try to avoid using in our print copy. I've called it a controversy as well. And again, I think it goes to this question of motive. Certainly, as I said before, if you're one of these groups that got held up for 3 years and couldn't organize and couldn't get donors, this is a scandal. And it affected you in a material way, and it's a big problem.
Nick Confessori, who wrote Sunday Story in the New York Times about this and generally covers the intersection of money and politics. Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Thank you both.
Hey, thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, the great author Khaled Hosseini, best known for his novel The Kite Runner. We'll talk about his new book. Khaled Hosseini next. Stay with us.